This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 8th of December, 2021. A strong session yesterday, to say the least. We had a tremendous rebound. To what degree we can attribute it to what is, of course, debatable, but obviously with a more promising news stream on the Omicron variant and how big of a threat it is beginning to fade, those uncertainties beginning to fade, and somehow the market also absorbing that Fed hawkish shift, we saw a tremendous recovery in the market yesterday, to say the least. A squeeze on shorts, no doubt, as well, and perhaps likely some derivatives involved in the comeback here. Let's look at our S&P 500 chart on slide two. You can see the degree to which it just sliced back all through those local resistance levels, and we're essentially trading within a percent or so, and certainly within a percent of the all-time high close, if not the all-time high intraday levels. And look at the baskets, the equity themes that we track. The most speculative stuff, obviously, high beta to this recovery move. Bubble stocks up 5% on a single day. Something like Next Generation Medicine up 6.6%. There was a news item overnight. It didn't sound as promising as the headline. It said that the Pfizer vaccine, by the way, offers some coverage for the Omicron variant. But when you look in the details, it said something. It cited a 40-fold reduction in the number of antibodies produced. So it sounds to me like it's very partial, if you will. But obviously the other news around Omicron and its virulence has been promising. And as well, some of these South African case numbers have been falling in recent days. Still need to track it, but it looks like the market is trying to get on the other side of that, certainly in terms of risk appetite. And as well, we've seen the shift from China towards easing. I think that's in play as well here, hopes for the global growth outlook. You're seeing the Chinese renminbi pushing at the lows for the cycle here, the lows for the year, essentially. You can see that on slide three. So that's the dollar offshore renminbi rate there. The 635 level is approximately the lows for the year. And that'll bring in the focus on that sub 625 low from 2018. But look where on the sort of a broader basis and on a basket basis, how strong the renminbi is over on the right. That's their official basket they maintain versus a number of other currencies, essentially hitting those highs. And this is a weekly number, so this is only as of last Friday. Those highs established when the basket was created and defined back in late 2015, shortly after their big exchange rate regime shift earlier in 2015. And then just rounding out the FX space, so we've seen this big recovery in risk appetite, a bit more of a focus on the commodity currency, snapping back on that. And we'll get to you, Ole, in a moment on oil. But certainly with that recovery, a sloshing focus from the safe haven currencies like the yen, Swiss franc, even the dollar to a degree, back to the commodity currencies. And you can see that on slide four. The momentum shifts have been tremendous over the last couple of days, where we've seen this big recovery mood. A move, and we see Dollar Canada there coming all the way back down well below 127, and we have a Bank of Canada rate decision today. I'll get to that later when we have the macro calendar roundup, but although we've got more or less a complete recovery in the equity market, at least the U.S. equity market, a lot more positivity out of Asia for sure, a little bit more wood to chop to get that oil price back towards those highs. So what are oil traders focusing on here for next steps?
I think in the short term, John, they're probably focusing mostly on just getting some stability into this market after that big drop we had on the Omicron virus news. So we've had a strong couple of days recovery here. We've broken above the 200-day moving average, currently around 70 on WTI. But then overnight, just drifting a bit lower. Some of that being driven by the American Petroleum Institute. Yesterday, it came out with a weekly stock report ahead of today's official EIA. And it as you can see in the insert there on slide five, there's quite a big increase in both crude oil and stock and products. And especially Cushing, which is the delivery point for WTI, has basically led to quite a bit of a collapse at the front end of the curve in terms of how tight the market is perceived to be. So that's just adding a bit of pressure to ahead of the number today. But But overall, a market that has found its, I would say, found its footing here. The outlook into next year is still very much up in the air, because we still see the EIA, IEA, and OPEC all calling for a more balanced market beginning of next year, basically not really supporting any further or any strong price gains, at least during the early parts of 22. And yesterday we had the monthly short-term energy outlook out from the EIA, and I put in a couple of inserts from their update. You can find all these excellent charts on if you just look for EIA STEO on Google that, and you can find all sorts of different charts. But these are just a couple of them. And as you can see, we've gone through a year and a half here where we basically had stock draws, demand rising faster than supply, and that looks like according to them that it will that demand will or supply will catch up next year, thereby creating a balanced market. And with that in mind, they're basically seeing the average price for WTI next year at $66, $4 below where we are right now. Clearly not the view that's shared by many banks, given the outlooks that are coming out right now. They're still looking for strong gains, especially, I'll say, into the second half next year when OPEC depletes their spare capacity and we start to focus on where the next barrel is going to come from, not least considering the lag of investments that we're seeing from some of the oil majors going into the industry. But for now, the main thing is just to get the market balanced or get some stability into the market. Looking at how far we dropped, you can always argue if the Omicron was suddenly out of the way, we should return back above $75. But I think we still see some flare ups around the world, especially in Europe right now. But I think we're also seeing that in China. So that will keep demand from recovering strongly, at least in the short term.
Yeah, I'm sure OPEC will have plenty to say about the supply demand balance next year as well, and certainly the price, I would imagine, as well, which could alter, I suppose, their production outlook at times next year as well, as they have done recently.
Exactly.
And we've talked about China, and one of the reasons China has kept such a strong currency, when we look at their producer price index, a key index of global inflation, this has gone all the way up to 13.5% as the October data print. That the latest print for November will be out tonight. It's important. Expected to fall down to 12.1%. There will be some rebasing effects that probably are a tailwind for improved inflation levels, if improved means lower. But it's really interesting. It's shaping up into 2022 as we're seeing these signals of easing. They're trying to sort of bring reassurance at the same time as there have been clear signals that they're not about set to do one of these all-out stimulus moves like they did in the cycles after 08-09 and in 15-16 timeframe as well. So you've got some charts here on some of the demand figures for imports into China.
Yeah, and that's we had the monthly trade data out from China yesterday. I'm just inserted a couple of the major commodities, and you can see there was quite a decent pickup across these growth dependent commodities: crude oil, coal, iron ore, and copper. And that's also helped to a certain extent or support some of these metal markets. We're seeing copper trading a tad high, even though it's not really going anywhere right now, stuck in the range. But something like iron ore has really been on a tear recently. And as you can, I've just put in the chart here, just showing the last few months, and you can see what a roller coaster market, really, really volatile. And after hitting a sub $90 per ton low last month, we're now back above $110. And it's interesting because we got some conflicting news there. The market has been driven, I'd say, speculative sentiment supported by the rate cut you mentioned, John, in China, but also some talk about social housing construction being implemented by the government, thereby also supporting the demand for steel. So iron ore, I'd say, at these levels is bit frothy, I think there is a risk that the fundamentals right now may not really stack up and be strong enough to support a continued rally. So I'll be a little bit lukewarm here on iron ore, but as it shows, a decent recovery last month also in the imports, putting to rest some of the worries that China could be a major drag on commodity demand and thereby also commodity prices in 22.
Yeah, and then I really love the perspective. We talked yesterday about the crazy forward curve market for something like coffee, where the this tremendous backwardation, which helps in terms of the roll yield. So when you have a forward curve where future prices are set significantly lower, let's look at crude oil, for example, even if the price stays stable month to month, in other words, the spot month, buying the future contract and then rolling perhaps, for example, every 3 months, you get actually very positive returns in an environment of stable prices. So you've got a great perspective there on slide 7 with that 1 year roll curve chart on the right there. Take us through what that means besides what I just said and what you think about the BCOM, which is that's the one that's the spot commodity index, is it not?
Exactly, and yeah, you said it very well there, John, very eloquently. The what I put in here just is one of the ETFs tracking the Bloomberg Commodity Index. Remember, the Bloomberg Commodity Index is basically invested 1/3 roughly in energy, metals, and agriculture. A bit more of a broad exposure compared to some of the others, especially the S&P GSCI, where more than 50% is exposed to the energy. But this broad exposed commodity index, and thereby also the ETF or the ETN in this case, has rallied 25% year to date. It's down 8% during the last month, as you can see on slide 7. But finding some support here around that 200-day moving average. So where do we go in 22? And I think basically what you're saying that, John, it is part of the story because we got a market where there's still tightness. Tightness is reflecting in the futures curve because that means the spot price tends to trade higher at further out prices. So basically, if you today bought a basket of 23 of the major commodities 1 year out, you would basically be and expecting no change in the price, spot price over the next year, you would basically be making a return of around close to 4%. And that's obviously quite a bit higher than you get on a treasury bond at this moment in time. So just with flat prices the next year, you'll make on an investment in commodities. And if you then add to that the prospect for continued tightness in the market, especially I would say in the energy space as we talked about, but also unfortunately in the agricultural space where surging fertilizer prices with gas prices at these levels, so they'll continue to have a potential negative impact on production. Next year, we got the El Niño weather, which is playing havoc. We mentioned coffee yesterday as one of the victims in this. And then just adding the whole green transition as well, adding demand for industrial metals. With this in mind, I think that we still see higher prices for the sector next year. Not 25%, that's probably a little bit on the steep side, but I would say given the roll yield, I would say at least, you can never say at least, but we expect somewhere between 5 and 10% as a potential minimum return for over the next 12 months. But as you can see on the chart, it is a very volatile market. So it's not one where once you put all the chips in.
All right. Indeed not. Let's especially when it said, you know, those perspectives on the forward curve are so important, and that's what so many people misunderstood back in the day when prices seemed to be fairly stable and they were losing their shirt because the roll yield was negative. Exactly. Important perspective there. Okay, there's been a number of headlines cropping up out of the U.S. that I think are really important to track, and mostly on the political front, but have important implications for next year. And I've collected a few of these and put them on slide 8. An interesting signal from U.S. Secretary of Treasury Yellen, who in an interview with the Financial Times said that the supply chain shift may need some protectionist-like steps. Of course, this has been something that's been underway for a while, especially since the semiconductor shortage has put U.S. auto production sidelined huge amounts of U.S. auto production because cars can't be completed without the key chips. That's one area. The proof is in the pudding, if you will, for me. If something like the medical PPE gear from the pandemic, I remember reading an article recently in which a lot of the efforts to produce some of this equipment in the U.S. that got underway, some of these places are closing down again because the U.S. is overwhelmed with an influx of the cheaper gear out of China. It just seems an irony to me that even on the pandemic protection gear front, that somehow the U.S. is unable to sustain something along protectionist lines. But still an interesting signal and just something to put out there to watch for follow-up stories on that front. Interesting article as well from Bloomberg. If you want to Google it, there's and I believe I tweeted it out as well, were discussions of ways for companies to apply to have some of the Trump era tariffs reduced if there was no benefit seen in having these tariffs assessed. So a signal that they want to look for places where it's in the interest of perhaps national security and economic security, but not necessarily just tariffs per se, which was the Trump approach at times. Elsewhere, and more briefly, House passing legislation. This is actually really key, just to finally remove this this block from the market. The debt ceiling issue looks like it will be on hold for quite some time, as the House has passed a new bill that would allow the Senate to raise the debt ceiling by a simple majority vote. The interest here is in avoiding brinksmanship, obviously, over the issue, shutting down the government and all the disruption that causes, because either side can point the finger on that front. I think the Republicans are trying to, allow the House, or sorry, allow the Democrats to pass everything on a go-alone basis up to the election, hoping that the economy, this is lovely U.S. Political thinking, that the economy and inflation are still going to be an issue at the election, in the election timeframe next year, and they can point all of the blame on the Democrats and see, it was only Democrats that voted for all of these debt ceiling raises. They're irresponsible, et cetera, even though, of course, this utter hypocrisy, as both parties have always been expanding these deficits. Actually, Republicans even worse than the Democrats. I'm not saying that as on a partisan basis. Finally, and I've been talking too long about this, Manchin, and this is key because this is supposedly up for an attempt to get it passed before the end of the year. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin holding off and still concerned about passing a big reconciliation bill, the so-called Build Back Better bill, with mostly social spending, when he's concerned about its effects on pouring more money into the economy and inflation. So he may just be playing hard to get in terms of getting more for his state, but we have to watch that story as well. Okay, earnings watch. I'm not going to spend much time on this, but the latest earnings for today that are up today are on slide 9. I did read a little bit into this UiPath, which Peter mentioned yesterday. Interesting company, a robotic process automation software. What does that mean? They try to look at sort of processes that office workers are carrying out on software. So not robots in terms of on the factory floor, but robotic processes, roboticizing processes. So if you can imagine somebody dealing with customer relationship management software or ERP software, clicking through all these menus in repetitive fashion, it's aimed at raising their productivity. Interesting company. You can see the chart does not look very impressive there on slide 9 since its IPO, but that's because it's a popular area. It's innovative, productivity increasing. So it got one of these huge valuation multiples on its IPO. Trading right now, assuming we get the quarterly revenue in as expected, at 30 times sales. So you can see why it has a hard time sustaining such valuations. Really would have to knock it out of the park, I think, to impress this market. Small side note, ARK Innovation, the Cathie Wood-led investment fund, has some 5.5% of this company as of late September. All right, let's round this out with the macro calendar. Bank of Canada upped with a decision today. A very small minority, supposedly, or at least the forward curve, supposedly pricing in a small odds of a rate hike today. The vast majority do not expect a hike today, but are looking for a quite hawkish meeting. We've got Canadian short rates at the highs for the cycle, essentially. Obviously, that's been aided by the Fed's big shift here and recent CPI data. So expect a hawkish shift. Expect a tip off that they are going to hike, which is expected by the market in January. So again, to what degree are we fully revving back up to hopes for economic growth and a commodity bull cycle? I think that's going to determine whether Canada can get much out of what is clearly expected to be a hawkish shift here. And then we have the CPI from, and PPI more importantly, from China overnight. A Brazilian rate announcement, another big 150 basis point hike to 9.25% expected from the current 7.75% level. We're seeing emerging market currencies rally in this environment. Makes sense, as we're seeing risk sentiment improving quite dramatically. The next two key tests, though, for this market are on your calendar, at least the Friday one, that November CPI. To what degree does that concern the market if it beats expectations of a new high for the cycle of 6.7%? as we head into next Wednesday's really critical final major event risk of the year, and that is the FOMC meeting with its, of course, adjustment and the Fed's official forward guidance, now that we've seen Powell already sort of rolling that out in recent comments and testimony, et cetera, over the last a couple of weeks. All right, that is a wrap for today. We will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.